aspect of Chesed. So this week's parasha, starting already last week's parasha, we have seven plagues, seven makas in last week's parasha, followed by three in this week's parasha. And the way Rashi describes it, when a king goes to war, then a king starts off by cutting off the water supply, dam, and then taking away the food, sending in the bomb squad. We have Borod, when you have the water and ice and fire mixed together. And then it comes to this week's parasha, we have Makas Bechoros. And Moshe warns Paroi that tomorrow night there'll be the plague of the firstborns and all firstborns will die. And statistically, Moshe's been proven 100% correct. Every single thing Moshe has said has actually played out. And the Medrash tells us in this week's parasha that civil war broke out in Egypt and Mitzrayim. And the Medrash describes how thousands of firstborns caused a civil uprising against Mitzrayim, scared that they were going to die that night. That night, Paroi tells Moshe and Aaron to leave Mitzrayim immediately. And of course, only the next morning are Klal Yisrael, are we told to leave Mitzrayim. And the Targum, Yonason ben Aziel, writes something extraordinary. That a couple of days later, 3 days later, Dothan and Aviram, who we know caused tremendous trouble to Klal Yisrael, to the Jewish nation, and eventually they die in Parshas Korach, they go to Paroi. They didn't leave Mitzrayim. And they go to Paroi, and they say to Paroi, you know, 3 days ago, your slaves have left Mitzrayim. 3 days ago. They're not going to come back. And Paroi, in a frenzy, he stands on a box. Medrash says this. Targum says this. He stands on a box, and he says, who's going to come with me to bring back our thousands of slaves who have escaped? And thousands of Egyptians join Paroi to go and chase the Jewish nation and bring them back. And the question is, how can this be? 3 days ago, all these firstborns and their families led a civil uprising against Paroi. And they are fighting against Paroi that the Jews should leave Mitzrayim. And now they're running after the Jews to go and bring them back. It wasn't only them, it was their families. And you're going to tell me that they had no bechira, no free will. Only Paroi lost his free will. The Egyptians didn't lose their free will. In next week's parasha, we find something on this scale with the Jews. Because the pasuk tells us as follows. Vayidabar Hashem Moshe l'Emor. Hashem tells Moshe, saying, Dabra b'nei Yisrael, you should tell b'nei Yisrael, v'yoshuvu, they should return, v'yachanu, they should camp, ifnei p'yachiris, before p'yachiris. Now Rashi tells us, where is p'yachiris? So he says that they actually, if you work out, Klal Yisrael had traveled 3 days from Mitzrayim. Rashi tells us that they returned back, and Rashi says the following words, v'yachanu ifnei p'yachiris, hu pisaim. That was Pisaim. What was Pisaim? Pisaim was Mitzrayim. That means they went back into their enslavement. They went straight back into Mitzrayim. We don't find anywhere in these psukim that Klal Yisrael complained. In other words, they were very happy to go back to Mitzrayim without complaining. A couple of psukim later, all of a sudden, the Egyptians chase after them, and they reach them. Vayomer Moshe, the pasuk says, "Hamibli ein kavarim b'Mitzrayim." Are there not enough graves in Mitzrayim? Lokachtanu lamos b'Midbar, to take us to die in the desert? I don't understand. They were happy to go back into Mitzrayim, to go back into their camps, which they beat for the last 210 years.
They weren't happy to go.
We don't find anywhere in the Torah that they complained. Okay. And all of a sudden, when the Mitzrayim arrive, they're complaining.
Well, maybe they didn't go. Just to possibly mentioned 2 minutes ago,
Nachshmofer
said,
it seems that they listened. It says,
where did it say they listened?
Vadabar Avnei Yisrael, Vamapra. It doesn't say, we don't see otherwise in the Pasuk.
Well,
Seems that they were
happy.
You don't see the complaint either. They were told to go, but they didn't complain. But when the Mitzrayim arrived, that's when the complaints arrived. I don't understand. They should have complained at this point that they don't want to go. Why didn't they complain at this point? If the Torah is very happy to tell us that they complained when the Mitzrayim arrived, what was wrong with complaining when they're told to go back? We don't find any complaints. And the last question I wanted to ask was as follows. If you would be going with your family or anyone, you'd be going on a trip, what would be one of the first things that you would do to plan your trip? Presumably you would prepare lunch, because everyone likes to have their food with them. One of the reasons we are told that Klal Yisrael, why we nowadays eat matzah on Seder night, is because when we left Mitzrayim, there wasn't enough time to prepare lunch, and we had to have unbaked matzah. I don't really understand this. It should be simple that the first thing they prepared would be lunch. Sandwiches. What was wrong? What is the big miracle? What is the big nace that every single year we sit there on Seder night eating matzah? And the answer to all this is imagination. And I want to discuss three different aspects to imagination. There's a Sephorna. The Sephorna asks the following question. He asks, why is it that a lion will capture two zebras and will eat one of them for a meal and the other one will leave in its den? Us human beings will go to a wedding, a chasna, we'll be at home, we'll eat lunch, we'll have schnitzel, and we see someone, we'll eat seconds. What's the difference between us human beings and animals? And explains the Sephorna that the answer is imagination. Because when the waiter comes in and offers a second portion of main course, our mind plays out to ourselves and imagines that the next bowl the next bowl of chalon or whatever you're going to eat will taste better. And that's what pushes us to eat the next portion. And the most famous example of this is from Adam and Chava. Because the snake comes to try and persuade Chava to eat from the Eitz Hadas, the special fruit which was forbidden to them. And just a couple of hours ago, or minutes ago, Hashem had told Chava, Adam and Chava, not to eat it. How can it be that literally a short while later, Chava would be tempted to eat it? And the Sephorna explains that Chava's imagination started playing out to her. He said, it's not so bad, Hashem didn't really mean it. And then all of a sudden, when the snake makes Chava touch the Eitz Hadas, then her imagination played out to her that it's not so bad. And that's why she fell into the temptation and ate from this forbidden fruit. And this is the power of imagination. Imagination makes reality into a fantasy. But Rabbi Shlomo Salanter explains that we actually need imagination. Imagination makes us human beings forget about death. If we wouldn't have imagination, then we would be constantly living a morbid life, imagining that everyone's going to die, and we're going to die. And that's why Chazal say, Toiv lo leches lebeis avel, mi lo leches lebeis amishta. It's better to go and visit someone who's mourning than going to a wedding. Why? Because going to a shiva, going to a beis avel, actually brings us back to reality. And this is the next point which I want to come on to. Because if you had offer a little boy, a five-year-old boy, one hand, you have a bar of chocolate, and the other hand, you have a £1 million check, the chances are the boy would take the chocolate. Why? Because in his little mind, he imagines that this bar of chocolate is what I can see. The £1 million check is just a piece of paper. He doesn't imagine it. He can't imagine how big it is. And this is actually one more point. Rav Dessler explains. He explains that there's many wealthy people in the world, and the way we see wealthy people is that wealthy people live a very happy, serene life in their mansions, their swimming pools. And Rav Dessler says that Hashem created that we look at all wealthy people as if they are happy people. Because if it wouldn't be like this, then there would be no aspiration to become wealthy, and there'd be no desire for anyone to become wealthy, and there's an importance to have money in the world. And this is possibly the reason that when the Jews were confronted by the Egyptians, they all of a sudden wanted to return to Mitzrayim, because they had been freed a week earlier, and they were now living on a high. But all of a sudden, when their captors, the Mitzrayim, arrived back to them, and all of a sudden reality hits them, that's when they start complaining, Hamibli in Kavaram b'Mitzrayim, are there not enough graves in Mitzrayim? And there's another aspect to imagination. And this is the way they train cats to dance. Because what happens is the trainer puts the cat on a board which gets very hot and very cold. And of course, every time the board heats up, the cat jumps in the air because it's afraid of the heat. And eventually, the heat boards up, the board heats up with a rhythm. And it goes according to the rhythm of music. And at some point, the cat realizes and understands that every single time the board gets hot, syncing with the music, it will jump up. And eventually, they can turn off the heat, and the cat jumps with the rhythm of the music. What's the reason for this? The reason for this is because the cat, the sensation that the cat feels every single time it gets hot, the cat replays every single time the music goes on. And Ivan Pavlov, he worked to unveil the secrets of the digestive system. And he had the following study. He sees that every single time we are hungry and we see food, then our saliva glands start working. And he one day noticed that dogs started drooling at random times. And he analyzed that when the saliva gland started working was in actual fact when they saw the lab coats of the scientists there working with them. So he realized that the dogs reacted to the food, they imagined their food every single time they saw a lab coat. And he carried on famously with the bell. He used to ring a bell every single time the food was coming in. And at some point he decided to ring the bell without the food coming in. And he saw that the saliva glands of the dogs used to ring the same way when there was no food as when there is food. The Gemara in Kesubos actually tells us that if you bring in some very spicy food and the person can smell it, there might be an obligation to give the person part of your food, because it could bring on possible death. It's a Gemara. The Gemara says this. Possible death to a person because his imagination, his saliva glands get so strong that he actually feels that he needs this food. We know a couple of years ago, so I used to live in Hanof, and a couple of years ago, when I was on my way to shul, Shacharis, 7 o'clock in the morning, I used to be in Rav Tzvi Shlesky's yeshiva, and I was on my way to shul. And when I was on my way to shul, it was a very quiet morning, and I see some people coming towards me, and they say to me, "Yesh piguasham, there's a terrorist attack going on there." And I was walking along, lived a little quiet enough, I didn't imagine anything could ever go on in my life, and I ignored. I carried on walking, get to the end of Hakablam, where I used to live, and all of a sudden I see lots of people running towards me. So I turn back on myself. And as I turn back on myself, I get back to where I lived, Ten Akablan, and I was outside my house, and all of a sudden I see literally tens of police cars, fire engines coming towards me, police cars and ambulances. The first one asked me, "Efozer B'nai Torah? Where's the shul B'nai Torah?" And I showed him where the shul was, and literally seconds later, I could hear, couldn't see, all the shooting going on from my house. And for me, it was a big shock to my system. I went back home, at Davon Shacharis at home. And later on in the night, I went to visit my brother. And of course, we know, unfortunately, those people were killed in the shul which I used to go to regularly. And I'd actually eaten from someone from London in Goldberg's house just a couple of weeks before that, 3 weeks before that. And that night, I went to Ramema to visit my brother. And when I was on the bus, when you drive into Ramema, you see the Mada station. And all of a sudden, an ambulance pulls out. And it triggered me back to that reenactment of the morning events, seeing all those ambulances and police cars coming past. And interestingly, very often when I'm going down the road and I see ambulances, it just brings me back to that memory. Now, what's the reason to that? The reason to that is that, again, imagination. Our imagination is linked up with our emotions. And when an emotion plays out in our minds, this actually links back to imagine and reenact what has taken place. The Egyptians, before the plague of Machus Bechorus, all they were thinking about was the reality. Moshe has been proven correct. Every single Makkah, every single plague that has actually been told to us has actually happened. And we're going to die to it. We're not going to stand for it. But 3 days later, when Paro is standing there and he's saying, our slaves have left us. We're not going to be able to survive without slaves anymore. All of a sudden, the Mitzrayim see to them see that they've lost their slaves. They've lost their status. They've lost their wealth in life. And this was too much for them to handle. And that is what pushed them to run after all the Jews and try and bring them back. And this is possibly, back to our third question, the same thing by when we ask the question, how is it when the Jews, they lived through 10 Makkahs, and every single Makkah had been proven correct, and when it comes to the 10th Makkah, Hashem says, tomorrow you're going to go out of Mitzrayim, and they didn't actually have time to prepare their matzah. What's going on? So I heard from Rishocha Fran a couple of years ago, as follows. When the first Makkah took place, Dan, so the Jews imagined that they were going to leave Mitzrayim. 7 days later, what happens? Paro, hard heart again, and he backtracks and he says he's not going to let them leave. The same happened by Tzfardea, the same happened by Kinim. And that can explain why by Choshech, when it comes to the eighth plague, Choshech arrives, and four-fifths of Klal Yisrael die. Why did four-fifths of Klal Yisrael die? The reason is because by the time it comes to the ninth Makkah of Choshech, they had sort of given up. Their emotions had played to them. They'd gone up, down, like a roller coaster. They'd imagined they were going to leave, and they didn't go. Imagine they were going to leave, didn't go. Imagine they were going to leave, and didn't go. And when it came to Makkas Bechorus, they're told, tomorrow's going to be the day you're going to leave. A number of them, quite a lot of them, actually imagined to themselves, you know, should I even bother preparing my lunch? They couldn't imagine it. Their imagination played into them that they weren't going to leave. And that's the reason why they didn't actually have to, they didn't prepare for the matzah. And that's what we say. It's actually a sephora in Parashat Vayeshev, by when Yosef was driven out of the pit. Yosef says, the sephora says, Yeshua Hashem Kerefayin, the salvation of Hashem comes like the blink of an eye, like we find that Klal Yisrael were taken out of Mitzrayim. When Klal Yisrael thought at that point that there was no, they were never going to go out, that was the point when Hashem decided to take them out. Now there's a third aspect to imagination. And that is at the end of next week's parasha. At the end of next week's parasha, so parasha's B'Shalach, Klal Yisrael received them on. They receive every single day a certain amount of man. And the Pasuk says, Vayemeh Moshe Aleihem, Perek Tes Zayim, Pasuk Yates, Moshe says to Klal Yisrael, Ish al Yoser Mimeno Ad Boike, no man should leave from the man until the morning. V'loi Shomo Moshe, Rashi tells us again, Dosan and Aviram didn't listen to Moshe, Vayesiru Anoshim Mimeno Ad Boike, and some people left until the morning, Vayorom Toloim Vayevosh, and worms grew on it and it went moldy. Vayiktev aleihem Moshe. Moshe got angry. And the question is asked, what was so wrong? What was so wrong with Dosan and Aviram leaving over a bit of man? And Moshe got so angry with them. You know, so they left a bit of man over. So Rav Druk, in his Sefer Darash Modchai, brings the following, based on a Meshech Chochma. Klal Yisrael, during the 40 years in the Midbar, were living on a very high madriga. They were living on a very high level and closeness to Hashem. And the level they were living on is that every single day they ate their man, and they didn't know, and they finished all their food, and they didn't know if next day, if tomorrow, more food will arrive. And so every single morning they had to wake up, daven to Hashem, will my food arrive today? All of a sudden, Dothan and Aviram come along, and they eat the food. They leave the food, sorry. And when they leave the food goes moldy. All of a sudden, Klal Yisrael, the reason why they're finishing off their food is not because they have emunah and bitochen in Hashem. It changes. The reason why they're finishing their food is because there's no point leaving any food, because it's going to go moldy. Moshe gets very angry with them, because Moshe says, up until now, the reason why Klal Yisrael were finishing their food was because they had emunah in Hashem. They had to imagine and live a realistic life that tomorrow Hashem will provide us with more food. And Dothan and Aviram removed this imagination from them, removed this aspect that they have to believe and have emunah in Hashem. And that's what Dothan and Aviram did. They cheated Klal Yisrael of this opportunity. When I was in my last yeshiva, Reb Tzvi Kishlevsky, he once came to England a couple of years ago, and I brought him to Tashba in Edgeway. And all the boys came out to him, and he asked the following question to the school. He says, why is it that Seder night is the night that the focus of Seder night is on all the children? You know, the entire Seder night is child-focused. What's wrong with Purim maybe a bit more child-orientated? My father-in-law, when I eat by him Seder night, he goes out after Manishtana, and he comes with his pari hat on, and he goes and he pretends he's crying over the morrow, and all the children watch him. And why is all this for? We say on Seder night, the only time in the year we say this, we say, "B'chol dov adar, chayev adam, laharis es atzmoi, kiilu hu yotzam Mitzrayim." Sorry? Kiilu hu yotzam Mitzrayim. Every generation we have to show to ourselves and imagine to ourselves that we actually left Mitzrayim. When did Klal Yisrael become a nation? The Kuzri explains that when we became a nation was actually when we left Mitzrayim. Up until that point, there was seven nations, and there were the seven Noachad lords, the seven Mitzvah B'nai Nach, and these, we were part of them. And we were slaves to the Egyptians, and we weren't a proper nation. The reason why we have to imagine and visualize ourselves leaving Mitzrayim is because we have to put ourselves back into the situation when we became a nation. Reb Chaskel Levenstein, they used to say about him, that one Seder night, some Talmidim saw him, they came into the Beis Medrash and they saw that he had split the two tables of the yeshiva apart. They had split the tables apart and he was walking through the middle. And they asked him, "What are you doing here?" And he said, "I'm imagining I'm going through the Yam Suf." This is what he said. Rabbi Adelaide Whitler used to say in yeshiva when I was in Gateshead, he said that if we would go to sleep imagining that we would be watching the Egyptians going through the plague and leaving Mitzrayim, the Yetzirah would put us to sleep straight away. Because this is exactly what the Yetzirah doesn't want us to do. He doesn't want us to imagine that we've left Mitzrayim. Because this is what the mitzvah is, to visualize and reenact that we were Klal Yisrael leaving Mitzrayim.
Nice.
Have a good day.
Very nice.